Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
I think companies fail because they're thinking of investing in everything else except the most important thing that doesn't show up on a corporation's balance sheet, and that is human potential. The human potential can only be extracted with creativity, creating an environment where people are able to create and solve the problems there. So I think they're forcing individuals within the organizations to use more of their intuitive gut feeling as opposed to going on the rigid, you know, very strict paper-based analysis on many things that they're working on. So I think companies, when they embrace those types of tactics and ideas, it's going to eventuate and end up in strengthening their revenue generating departments. That's the way that I see that.
We are here today with Delano Johnson, known as the CEO of Creativity. Delano is the author of the best-selling book, Refuse to Live Talented and Broke. He's also an international speaker, brand architect, and a leading authority on personal and corporate creativity. And he's worked with some of the world's most recognized brands like BMW, Pfizer, Sheraton, Verizon, AT&T, and Disney, just to name a few. He has worked as the online creative manager at Toys R Us, and in 3 years, his creative leadership there helped grow the online division from $50 million to over, get this, $750 million. Quite a jump. Recently, Delano founded the House of Creativity, a growing network of creatives from all over the world. Delano, welcome to Innovation at the Edge. It's an honor to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Michael. This has been a long time in the making. I'm just so happy to be here.
Begin by just telling the audience about your personal history related to creativity, especially in companies.
I got married and settled down and took a few classes with graphic design. And I bought a computer and my graphic design business was born. Next thing I know, I had 13 employees and I had my office in New Jersey, and I had an office also in New York, a satellite office in New York. And so after a while, and we sold the company, I took a job at Toys R Us. And the job was the online creative manager. Now, I knew that the online space was becoming extremely important for business. And that was a three-year ride that was full. I was able to work with, you know, Hasbro and Disney and Sony and a whole lot of brands, in particularly the iconic FAO shorts. I had the opportunity to actually redesign the online channel. After a while, I always thought about this idea of having a conglomerate of creative people, because I believe creative people really rule the world. It's our inventions, it's our music. And so I imagine at some point in time that I would want to be a part of an organization or to lead an organization with creative people from all around the world, different ideas of what creativity is, but to really have a nucleus, a family, a group of individuals that saw that the world needed their creativity. And last year in 2020, during the pandemic, lo and behold, that dream actually became a reality because of the pandemic and because of an app that's called Clubhouse. So I started a club called the House of Creativity, whose goal is to really galvanize creativity from all around the world and work on projects that we feel would actually change and reshape the world that we saw fit.
What I'm curious about, we could talk about for a bit, is the difference between individual creativity and the work you've done with innovation in a number of companies, where as hard as it can be to develop the creativity of an individual, it seems even harder sometimes in companies to make companies innovative.
I like what Kalal Gibran said, that creativity comes through us and not to us. So creativity is really when you're in that state of mind where you're able to see problems, you're able to look at them in a different light, and then go into this ideation, inward ideation, where you see or you imagine solutions for those problems. And so hatching an idea and bringing it to, you know, to the seeing world, so from the ideation to the actualization, is that process of creativity. However, the innovation is being able to focus on very specific technologies to present that creativity to the world. And I think what happens with corporate innovation and creativity, sometimes it's extremely difficult as a big organization to actually maneuver and allow the space for creativity. Because you have people who are hired for specific roles, and those roles are vetted, and those roles are all needed. This person needs to do this to allow this to happen, to allow this to happen, so that revenue could be made, and so that shareholders could be happy and reinvest, right? And everybody keeps their job. So, but what happens is, there was a study done with Forbes magazine in 2010, and it was a study with 1,500 CEOs from across the world, from across different disciplines and different businesses. And the study was on the necessity of creativity in business leadership, mainly CEOs. And an overwhelmingly, 69% said creativity was the most important attribute for CEOs in the 21st century. In other words, it is the most necessary attribute. More than honesty, this is what they said, is more than honesty, creativity was the most important thing for a CEO to have. Why? Because we're basically living in this three C's, which makes the environment very difficult. Overwhelming change, fierce competition, and it was just extremely a very difficult environment from which CEOs have to operate. So I think what happens now, in the past, rather, it was more difficult to have individuals be creative or think outside of that box, because a lot of corporations didn't allow for being outside of a cube, right? You had the visual clue of thinking inside of a box, and then you had the lack of resources to think outside of that box. Now, companies like Google and Apple have shown that there is a different way to actually get better and more productivity from your employees. And so I think they've shown with different models as employees get to arrange their own schedules, where the life work balance is able to, they're able to manage that more. Studies show that people, most employees get most of their hard and most important work done between the hours of 9 and 1. So some employees would work during that time and go home on the other rest of time, or they would stay, but they would be in what we would call the employee's sandbox, areas within the organization where people actually get to go and play. And that's where they solve a lot of problems. So you have a problem on your mind, you go and play, and on the playground is where you find the solution. So it's just a remarkable thing that we're seeing that's happening now in throughout a lot of corporations. They're making space for creativity. They're allowing employees to have more freedom to take off the stringent rules and guidelines and kind of open up that box a little bit so that they can get out and change their thinking. I love what Einstein said, is that we can't solve the same problem with the same thinking that got us into that problem. So I think now that there's some open-mindedness to actually allow for more creativity, whereas 10 years ago, it was a little bit more difficult to have that done.
And yet there's so many challenges to that ability for companies to achieve the creativity that they're now willing to achieve. What are some of the difficulties you've seen in your experience with companies trying to be more creative and innovative and perhaps struggling or failing?
I think companies fail because they're thinking of investing in everything else except the most important thing that doesn't show up on a corporation's balance sheet, and that is human potential. The human potential can only be extracted with creativity, creating an environment where people are able to create and solve the problems there. So I think one of the problems is simply the pressure, alleviating the pressure for them to perform. If they look at most of the documentation that is shown for some of the most creative companies, and when you look at Apple, one of the most creative companies, when you look at a company like Google, now we're seeing that Amazon as well is joining the ranks of innovation. I mean, they can only grow in one area so big. You know, you take that over, then you have to grow in other areas. So that's why they're really growing and expanding it. And what they're finding is, and if you look at a lot of the properties that they're acquiring and the talent that they're acquiring, are individuals who have a reputation of creativity. I mean, you can't go to space thinking the same way you used to. And so it's remarkable what they're doing is they're adding teams to their creative innovation teams. They're adding team members to their creative innovation team that would not necessarily be or have the expertise in that area. Because what they're finding is that thinking differently from a totally different experience and a totally different work set and totally different tools allow someone with a fresh perspective to come into old problems and to see that from a different angle. So there's a lot of value in that. So the companies that don't do that, they don't allow for hiring based on, you know, 40% capability, but 60% intuition in the interview, right? What do you feel about that person? How did you, what vibe did you get from him? Were you able to determine that what they talked about was true? So they're forcing individuals within the organizations to use more of their intuitive gut feeling as opposed to going on the rigid, you know, very strict paper based analysis on many things that they're working on. So I think companies, when they embrace those types of tactics and ideas, I think they're, but depending on what industry they're in, the output is going to be extremely relevant to the employees, first of all, and then it's going to eventuate and end up in strengthening their revenue generating departments. That's the way that I see that.
Your book, Refuse to Live Talented and Broke, focuses on how a creative individual can maximize their own chance for success.
First of all, it was birthed out of an experience of someone who had in their mind a certain level of success, but didn't realize that your plans is one thing, but the actual navigation through life processes, right? That process, which builds character, gives you the type of success. But if you don't understand how to manage your life through the process and then outside of the process when you're done, when you've attained that success. So basically, it is a book that capitalizes the 10 different things in the creative process that prevent creative people from attaining and or sustaining the success that they intend to have or the success that their talents demand that they have. These are the things that we overlook in our lives. Your success is built on your character. And if your character has flaws, if your character, the foundation of it is not strong, then the success, well, the pressure of that success will simply collapse all that you worked for. And that's what happened to me. I basically became a millionaire at age 33. And by 39, I lost everything. And I read over 300 books. And that's where I was able to extract a whole lot of principles that I missed in life. Even though I had some mentors, I missed it. And so the book capitalizes, and it's really a cheat sheet for people to come behind me who intend to sustain the success that they attain. It's really a cheat sheet on how you can actually build the inner life to be able to sustain the outer success that you achieve.
How can a company apply the same principles to avoid becoming talented and broke?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So for example, in the book, I talk about your inner value. Understanding everything that you're good at brings a certain value in the market. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we look at somebody's emotional intelligence as extremely valuable while we're hiring? Their ability to diffuse confusion, their ability to explain difficult situations, to galvanize a team, to come together for a cause. And that's leadership. In the book, I talk about your ability to do that. That is a value. And imagine if corporations really saw that as a valuable asset on the hiring, you know, on hiring day, sitting across the table, and they saw that in that person. And it's not necessarily just a leadership ability or gift or talent or something that's needed for leadership. It is needed for everyone. Everyone inside a corporation has to work with someone else. So your ability to get along and to create this environment where everybody feels special, needed, and their idea of creativity or their ideas are valid, right? Before they are thrown away or said that it's too expensive to do that or whatever. Imagine that environment that we create. So if we take another idea of team building. So one of the things I did in looking at hires is to formulate a team like I would a championship basketball team, right? So there are players. There are people on the team who everybody likes. They become influencers. They bring out the best in everyone because all the players want to be like that person. I imagine at some point everybody on the court with Jordan, with Michael Jordan, wanted to be a Michael Jordan. But while he was Michael Jordan, he didn't really become a true champion until he learned to pass the ball, right? Until he learned to pass the ball. And I talk about this in the book a little bit. When you really look at what Jordan gave to the team, it was 1,000% motivation and inspiration and only 10% skill. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if you really look at it, between all of the other players on the court, including an amazing Scottie Pippen, who was really the backbone of the team, when Jordan left the team, Pippen took his team, the Chicago Bulls, to the playoffs. Right? They didn't win because they didn't have that clutch player, the person who would put the ball in the basket in the heat of the pressure. So it said to me that without Jordan, if the entire team was able to get there to the playoffs, right, but lose because they didn't have that one person who did, it means that the entire team is valuable. So choosing your team, the people around there who can share the glory of a win, who can share the glory or the duty of responsibility, that's an amazing thing. So if you hire more like building teams as opposed to filling slots to move and push or sell widgets, I think that's the first level of where you will actually go into the psychology of who this person is and what they bring to the team. So you have a personal team, just like your corporation. If you're a solopreneur and things are going great, maybe through the pandemic, your business started to grow because you started to focus in or hone in on a major problem within the pandemic, and now your business is growing. Well, now you got to hire a team. So how do you do that? Where do you find the people from? If you go through the book, you'll see that there's specific players. There's your team cheerleaders, right? There are people on the team who are simply going to be there. They are the most can-do people. They're the motivating force of the entire thing. Whatever is happening, we can find a way around it. Every team needs that. So if an organization thinks like this, right, there's the person who is the go-to for a good dose of motivation or inspiration, right? Now, they may not perform like the other person does, but they bring a value to the team. And that value is extremely important. So that's another aspect of how I feel. And I actually do this now in terms of helping people to actually hire teams within their corporate structures or build teams within their corporate structures.
When we talk about innovation at the edge, what we talk about is, you know, bringing innovation throughout an organization. So it's not in a silo or an isolated in a department or even in a certain day of the week, right? But something that people do all the time across the organization and maximizing the ability to communicate, work together, collaborate, and be able to offer their input and receive actual input back, feedback. And it sounds like, you know, when you're talking about putting together teams and finding ways to balance a team in a good way, you're touching on some of that. So I'm curious, like, if you have thoughts about how we can best use innovation as a way to engage people.
80% of the people lose that battle of innovation by the first introduction of brainstorming. You have a team together, you brainstorm, and the leader or the curator or the manager of that space opens the floor and says, okay, guys, we need some ideas to solve this problem. The first person, employee number one, gives an idea. The leading manager says, well, that's a great idea, but we're not thinking, why don't you kind of shape that idea more towards this problem here? One of the main problems we do is we don't allow for free thinking. Innovation comes with your ability to solve that problem using your creativity in such a way that brings a new perspective. But you can't get perspective if your thinking is harnessed. So creating an environment where everything goes and there is no wrong answer. It's called CPS training. I do this in CPS training, creative problem solving. So we gather people together and we say, okay, we have to solve this lighting issue. So we've been having problems and concerns with all of the employees talking about the lighting issue. So it's something's happening with the lighting, which is something. And so we bring people together and we give them a needle, we give them a paper clip, and we give them chicken soup. And we say, now, we have to solve this problem using these things. And it is the disassociation which causes our brain to widen our spectrum of thinking, because now we have to associate these abstract objects with solving the problem. You would be surprised at how individuals are able to come up with innovative ways to solve that problem because their thinking was not inhibited. So this is one way that I help corporations to actually think outside of the box, right? Because we're not thinking in the box. We're thinking actually in a circle right now, right? We think in a circle and we go around. And so changing the way and the process of how we get to innovative ideas is the first step to changing the outcome of using innovation to solve major problems. Innovation is nothing in and of itself unless it solved a major problem.
What is the biggest danger you've come across in companies that gets in the way of that freedom that you're talking about?
Yeah, it is a stretch for the C-suites because, again, of the pressure to perform. It is a pressure to perform. And so we usually go to what worked last year with a small adjustment. At Toys R Us, it was very interesting. Every year, our biggest quarter is the last quarter during the Christmas shopping season. And so we would compare what's happening to other competitors. So if they have what we call a big book, this is the big magazine book-like ordering catalog that goes out to, you know, to basically your mailing list. We would look at, you know, the size of the book in terms of the pages. And so if the competitors had a 56-page book, we would say, oh, we're going to be more innovative. We'll have 58 books this year. All you're doing is adding to the small little degrees of changes. But instead, what I did with FAO Shorts is I thought, why don't we take the shopping experience away from turning pages? So I created a shopping experience online, which is the first time in the 150 years of FAO Shorts that it was ever done. And so, there was some animation to it. And so it was a totally different shopping experience. And we were able to get a write-up in the New York Times because of it. If you want to be noticed, simply be different. But if you're doing the same thing and you're solving problems the same way with one slight degree of difference from your competitors, then you really don't stand out. So the biggest mistakes that they make is having the fear of stepping out into something unknown. And of course, listen, I get it. You have to answer. The CEO has to answer to the chairman of the board. The chairman of the board has to answer to the board and the shareholders and the stakeholders. And that's extremely difficult in a competitive environment. But it is the individuals, the CEOs that take that risk, calculated risk, and allow departments to simply create new ways of doing things. Listen, an investment into four or five new thinkers into your department will eventuate into a stockpile of ideas from which you may be able to do something totally different. The investment of time in those individuals, I guarantee you, will be worth it. We saw it. I saw it in my business. We saw it at Toys R Us. And I'm seeing it in my clients and corporations that I work with already.
What advice would you give to someone listening to this podcast who's working in a company who wants to maximize the employee experience, the employee value, get people to be able to contribute the most to innovation?
So if you're in a leadership position, if you're a supervisor, if you have direct reports, you know, your main job is to unearth the abilities and the creativities, the hidden potentials and talents within the people that you work with. Besides the fact that they have a job description, your job description really is to help them to develop things about themselves that they never knew. And what a wonderful thing to have that done within that organization. There's two things that will happen. Number one, you'll be extremely valuable in terms of a close relationship to your direct reports. And number two, you'll be extremely valuable to the organization from whom you serve. Focus more on the hidden potential of the people around you. I hired a team of people when I was at Toys R Us, who I believe was extremely proficient. And it was my job to find projects and to champion and fight for projects that would give them the ability to actually showcase their talent. And the project that I just mentioned with FAO Shorts, that's what we did. Some of my key programmers at that point led the charge. And I created a wonderful experience for millions of people. So if you're in that space, you're in that spot, remember that, you know, a part of your job, big portion of your job, I would say 80% of your job is to help the people, your direct reports, to discover new things about their talents and the ones that they do know, creating opportunities for them to use those gifts and those talents so that your team can have a better self-esteem, a team esteem.
Is there anything else you'd like to say that you've thought of along the way today that I haven't asked you about?
Yeah, I'd like to share that one of the projects that I'm working on is to beat a Guinness Book World Record. We've done almost 100,000 units of my book within 4 years or so. And that's all just grunt work. I'm going after a major Guinness Book World Record, which is to beat the most books sold within a 24-hour period. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever attempted to do. But you know what? I had successes along the way that remind me of defeating those Goliaths in my life, the things that people said I couldn't do, when people said I wouldn't make money being a musician, when family members was afraid that I was going to be a failure. But I did it anyway. And yes, I failed sometimes, but those failures didn't define me.
What is the record you're trying to break specifically, exactly?
The most books sold on record is 8.3 million books sold within 24 hours.
And what book was that?
Oh, you're getting into it now. You're causing me to give away all of the juice here. So that book was Harry Potter. It was a book written by J.K. Rowling. And very formidable. So this is the biggest Goliath that I've ever gone up against to do anything. And so, you know what? It's worth the try. The only thing you can do is to fail trying and know how not to do it. And perhaps you have the courage to do it again and to go after it again. And so every record is made to be broken. Why not you?
Cool, Delano. This has been Delano Johnson, giving us the honor of his presence here on Innovation at the Edge. Thank you, Delano, for being with us. Again, it's been an honor.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you, buddy.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes.
We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.